Okay, so we're in the middle of a Mishnah, but, well, no, what in the Mishnayot is a separate Mishnah. The Gemara, basically, this whole Amud is a series of Mishnayot. So the Mishnah says, "Ein kotvin prosbul el ala karka." You can only write a prosbul on the basis of land owned by the borrower, because then you basically create a type of a lien, or you make it that the borrower has something, because you have something you can collect from, you can conceptualize it as if it's already paid, or it's already handed over to Beit Din. Now, technically, right, as we've seen, there's a machlok rishonim whether this is the same takana as Moser Shtarot of the Beit Din, or a different takana. If it's just Moser Shtarot of the Beit Din, it shouldn't need to have, you know, this idea that it's also lien property, which, as we saw, is different. So some rishonim say, yeah, that's true. But it's more like a Marad Ayin thing. And this is how the Rashbam takes it, that, yeah, really this is based on Moser Shtarot of the Beit Din, but we also want to do some things so that it looks, like you're relying on other heterim, so you have land so that it could be considered somewhat collected. The Rashi and Tosfo and the Rush have a different shot, and they just say, no, it's just a very technical reason. And that is, Milta lo shchicha lo gazer be'rabanan. Anything that isn't common, we don't make a takana for, and it was very rare for someone to not have any land. And therefore, now, that's a little bit odd, because in order to assume that that's relevant, you have to assume that the ownership of land is relevant to the loan, right? It's not like you say, well, it's very rare that I have, you know, this takana, and that the person is going to be usher with has, you know, orange, you know, has carrot orange hair, but in streaks, and then, you know, streaks of white in between, or something like that, right? That's just irrelevant. So you do have to assume that it's somehow linked. The Rosh Cirilio says, yeah, well, what it means is it has to be like Rov Shtarot, right? Is that the Shtar has to be similar to other Shtarot. That's how you would look at it. Or, he says, more formally, maybe what you would say is that if you have land, then we can conceptualize it as all the Metaltalin you own is Nikneh B'Kinyan Agav, right? So there's a special Kinyan called Kinyan Agav that you're able to acquire movable property with real estate. Then there's a machlok in the Gemara. Does it be on surim or not? Do you need that the property actually be found on the karka, right? Is it a formal thing? You don't actually need to be on the karka, which comes down to some of the lumdos that you see in the achronim, is whether kinyan agav is such that you don't need a kinyan for the metaltalin, or that the kinyan, you have the kinyan on the metaltalin. Or something like that. There are middle positions as well. But, and therefore the Rosh Hashanah is that this is essentially like a Kinyan Agav, that if you have land, so we can imagine that all your metaltalin are nikne, right, with that mechanism. And therefore it's not a problem with Loyigos, because it's as if he's already given you his property, and he's already started paying off the loan. Kilo. Like, it's like he did that. He didn't, but he did. Or he didn't.
So, like, an example would be, like, a donkey that's on a piece of land, and I buy the land.
Sure, I'm not going to get into movable things like that, but, like, things that move of their own accord, with Gemara's discussion about animals. But sure, you know, you whatever, I sell, yeah, my field, and I leave the plows there. Well, that's the machlok in the Gemara, whether it has to be there or it can be anywhere. So then the Gemara says, okay, so mizake b'toch sadeu kolshu, and sorry, v'meinlo, if he doesn't have, mizake b'toch sadeu kolshu, so let's say he doesn't have any land, that what we do is we formally have the lender bequeath the borrower some of his own land, technically, and then you can use that land to create the prosbul. Haitelo sadem mushkenet pe'ir. If the borrower had a field, what? Then that's a problem. Haitelo sadem mushkenet pe'ir. We'll get there, but not here. Haitelo sadem mushkenet. Well, we do all sorts of funky things, like, you know, the dalet amot you own in Eretz Yisrael. Haitelo sadem mushkenet pe'ir. What if you have a field in the town which is a security for a different debt? Kozmo le'prosbul. That is sufficiency, even if the borrower owns real estate, but it's a collateral for another debt, doesn't matter. Right, that's sufficient for these purposes. And Rav Chutzpit Omer Kotvin La Adam Al Nechsei Ishto. If your wife has property, that also counts because a husband has rights within his wife's property. Right now, there are different types of property. There's Nechsei Malog and Nechsei Tzor Barzel. Nechsei Malog is property which remains hers, but the husband can benefit from it, and that's also enough, even though it's still the wife's. The connection that the husband has to it is sufficient. And if you have orphans and they have an apotropos or they have a guardian, so you can use his property as well to write the prosbul. Now, certain things we have to ask, are they considered real property or not? So kaveret dvorim, if you have a beehive. So Rabbi Eliezer, right, so this is a man-made beehive resting on the ground but not attached to it. Eliezer says it is karka. It is considered karka for these purposes. The culture in a lab prosbul, and therefore you can use it for a prosbul. Now, there are other implications of something being tame and tahor, of being something being karka or not, or mechubar or not, is that it's not subject to tumah. Right? Things are not subject to tumah while attached to the ground. Now, there is a lot of brisker lumdus on whether the status of karka and metaltlin is the same as mechubar or not. They sometimes overlap, but they may be different models. But for the moment, let's just note that the Mishnah is conflating them. The Anamika, the Harodim, yeah.
I don't fully know what Mechuba means.
Oh, attached to the ground. Oh. Sorry. The Harodim and Mishnah Chayav. And if you detach honey from it on Shabbat, you are Chayav. You're Chayav Kotzer, right? Which is defined as here, quiz for you. A Kotzer is detaching anything from its source, right? It's harvesting, but it can be detaching anything from its source. The Chachamim Amrim Enamikah Karka. The Chachamim say, no, it's not like land. Vein Kodala Prisbul. You can't use it for Prisbul. Mekabel Tuma Bimkoma. It is considered Mekabel Tuma because it's not attached to land. But Ronim Enamikah Shabbat Pator. So if you take honey out of it on Shabbat, you're not liable. Amach Tirchav Bashvit. Now, what if you want to return a loan that was wiped away by Shemitah? Right, so presumably this doesn't mean during Shemitah, it means when Shemitah applies or something like that. Or possibly it's the Rush who thinks that even during Shemitah, right, we saw already that Moshe don't think there's no wiping away of loans until the end of Shemitah, but the Rush thinks that that you can't collect starting the beginning of Shemitah, but the loan is only officially wiped away at the end of Shemitah. But let's say you want to collect on a loan, you want to pay back a loan, you don't want to collect a loan, you want to pay back the loan. So im Omer Lafal Piche. So Omer Lomishavan, and the lender has to say, I relinquish the debt. Now, based on this, as I mentioned, there is the machloket. Is the wiping away of debts automatic, or is it something done by the person? So the Urayim uses this line to prove, Urayim and Kumsamach Dalid, that there is a mitzvah to be mishamed. It's not automatic. Right? The wiping away of loans is a chiyuv gavra. Most Rishonim disagree, and they say they're wiped away. Nevertheless, sometimes, even though the loan is wiped away, there's a chi of gavra to acknowledge it, right? To say, I acknowledge that I'm not the owner of my money. God is, and therefore God has the power to wipe away the loan. But even if I didn't, it's wiped away, which is the majority view in the Rishonim and the Achronim. But im amar lafal pichein. But if he says, I want to pay you back anyways, you're allowed to take the money, right? If he insists on doing this. So right now in the Bavli, it says what you should say is, I'm giving you, he says he should not formulate it as such. He should say that it is a gift. Now, interesting, the Mishnah doesn't explicitly say that, right? You could have said that you're allowed to pay back a loan. It's just that you're not a payback a loan under coercion, right? You're not allowed to collect a loan, but you can pay back a loan. Where the way the Bavli takes it very explicitly is, no, you're not allowed to pay back a loan. What you're allowed to do is give a gift that is the same amount as the money that he at some point owed you. Whether that is the only pshat in the Mishnah, but anyway, that's how it's taken in the Bavli. Shneva says, Zvar HaShemitah, we derive it from the fact that it says, and this is the word of Shemitah, right, or the matter, but Zvar can also mean word, like Dvarim. And therefore, he's saying, yeah, that means there's a verbal component to it. Kayotzibo, and similarly, Rotzeach Shagolli or Miklat, if an unintentional killer went to the Irmiklat, to the city of refuge, so Ratzu Anshe Yair Lechavdo, and people want to honor him, Yomer Len Rotzeach, and he has to tell them, you shouldn't honor me. I'm an accidental killer. Amr lo af al pichei. And if he says, yeah, well, we still want you, yekabel man, he can accept it. Shnemar v'zed dvar harotech, that his only obligation is to say, is to acknowledge the situation, and then they can do with that what they want. So now, the first part of the Mishnah, which we've done yesterday, is prosbol hamukdom kasher. If you predate a prosbol, it's valid. Why? The rule is because you made yourself weaker, because a prosbol only covers loans that were made before the prosbol was written. So let's say I say that the prosbol was written on January 1st, but it was actually written on January 7th, then any loans made between January 1st and January 7th, I should be allowed to collect. But by writing January 1st, I've weakened myself. I'm allowed to weaken myself. No problem. Vamuuchar, but if I say it was taken on January 7th and I put it on the 14th, that means there's a week of loans that I don't have rights to. Vamuuchar pasol b'mneshim yapakocho. I can't make myself stronger illegally. So the next section, shtarichol mugdam b'shul b'mneshim yapakocho. By regular loans, it's the opposite. Because by a normal loan, you are only allowed to collect the only property that's liened is things that you owned at the time of the loan. So if you push the loan forward, then less things are covered by the lien. If you push it earlier, more things are covered by the lien. So there you can do the opposite. You can push it forward and say, I'm not going to lien property for an extra week. Right? The malve is allowed to accept that on himself, but he can't say that property, you know, add a week in which he can collect. So Mimodia. Now, how are you supposed to figure out that it's predated? So Shimon bar Shimon Yochanan achatum b'shtar. You would figure out by asking the witnesses. So Lochin Amar Shimon Lakish Asu Divrei Hachatum b'shtar Kamisha Nechra Edutan Veveitin. But aren't you not allowed to do that? Because there's a rule, a fundamental rule in shtarot, which is that once something is written in a shtar, it is as if they've testified in court, and once they've testified in court, so the rules invoke Kevin Shehigit Shuvin Chozer Magid, that once you testify, you can't retract testimony. And this is one of the most important lines around shtarot, is what exactly, how do you conceptualize a shtar? And there is basically, you know, as people like saying, Reb Chaim's greatest chiddush of shtarot is that a shtar is a shtar. Is that many of the Rishonim thought that shtar was essentially a deposition, right? Was Edut B'Ktav, was testimony written, and therefore they tried to figure out how can you validate shtarot if there are many sugyot that that say explicitly that you can't testify in writing. So they come up with all types of explanations, like only if someone is mute and couldn't in theory have talked, then his testimony is invalid. But if someone could have talked, the fact that he didn't talk is an invalidation. For example, that's in Tosfot. But Reb Chaim says, no, a shtar is a shtar. It's a different chalos. It's not edut b'ktav. It's a different... It might have the result of Eidut, but it is a different status. It has this unique magic quality to it.
This does not apply to Ksubos.
No, it would.
In as much as for...
All Shara would be magic. Shara and a magic. Why would it not apply to Ksuba?
Because I thought the halacha by Ksubos was that you do need to bring an Eidim. If there's a machlokas on whether or not the Ksuba was ever actually signed.
No, but this is where it's signed. So there are all types of questions by all shtar. What happens when you raise questions about the validity of a shtar? But in that sense, Ktuba is more classic. Get is less classic, but Ktuba is classic.
Okay.
So the Gemara answer is Tamang Shamar Locha Tam Nikolikar. In Reish Lakish's case, they said we didn't sign at all. In that case, you can't do that because that's a retraction. And here they're just clarifying. Right, they're not retracting. They're saying they chose to, right, to post-date, pre-date, whatever. So they're just clarifying, right, and therefore, again, without getting to all the lumps of shtarot, their testimony is now doesn't have to face the power of a shtar because the shtar isn't contradicting them. Isn't contradicting them. Now there's a machloket here. The Ramban thinks that this is only they can only do this if we have no independent way of verifying their signatures. So therefore, we're completely at their mercy. So if we're completely at their mercy, so fine. Then they can come and say, listen, if it weren't for us being here, you wouldn't know because you always have to verify. You have to do kiyum shtarot, where you have to say, okay, is this a valid signature? But if we have no way of validating the signatures without them, then they control the situation. If they control the situation, then they can clarify. But if we independently verify the document, then they have nothing, right? They can't add anything. The Balamor says no. The Gemara is making a much more fundamental distinction that clarification is not the same as retraction. Right? It's just not the same.
Wait.
And therefore, this is mutter, even though you're not allowed to retract testimony. This isn't retraction. This is clarification.
Wait, hold on. So is what's being said here that if one of the witnesses said, no, that's a forgery, I did not sign that, he's not allowed to say that?
No, he can. That's the whole point, is that we have no independent way of verifying the signatures. He can say, that's not my signature. That's right. That's why you need Kiyum Sharot. Kiyum Sharot is the validating of signatures, right?
Wait, so you have two people that witnessed that he signed, but he said that he didn't sign.
No. You have two people say, yeah, that's that guy's signature.
Yeah, but the reverse case.
I have nobody who says that I know independently that that's his signature, and therefore I have to ask you, did you sign this? And
but
he can say no.
If you have witnesses to him signing, then
according to the Ramban, correct. If we have witnesses, not to him signing, that this is his signature, like his handwriting, or they look at it and say, we don't need you. I look at this, and it looks like you signed.
But then how do you deal with forgeries?
Oh, that's the problem, right? Good forgeries can, you know, as in general, good forgeries can be powerful, right?
Yeah, so then...
So you have to investigate and things like that. But fundamentally, right, yeah, a good forgery could escape the law. That's why it's bad. So now, Rabbi Yochanan Amar Psulin Mamash. Now, what do we mean it's invalid? So Rabbi Yochanan says invalid, like totally invalid. You can't collect based on the shtar ever. Not from the proper date or not from the improper date. It just, once the shtar is invalid, it's invalid. Shimon Lakish Amar, no. Eino Mona Mishad Aktav. It's a valid shtar. It's just that you have to base yourself on the date. It's just that you can't play with the times. But the shtar as itself functions. It testifies to the basics of the loan. Vatani, wait a second. But Prusbol, Ben Muktam Mokhar Kasher. Veino Monel Mishakhtav, that Prusbol, whether it's Muktam Mokhar, it is Kasher. It's just that you only cover loans that were prior to the writing. Im Omer Adkein B'Shtarot, Ma Bein Prusbol Ba Bein Shtar. That implies that it's only by Prusbol, right? That Prusbol is Kasher, it's only a question of which loans are covered. That by Shtar, we're contrasting with Prusbol, which implies that it's actually invalid. So Gemara leaves this question hanging. Okay. So then the Gemara says, fine, Shtar Shizmano Katav Shabbat. What if I have a document and it says the date was Shabbat? Obasar B'Tifshir Yom Kippur. Yehuda Machshir. Yehuda says it's Kasher. Why? Because we assume that he wrote it before, right? At Rabbi Yossi Posel. Rabbi Yossi says, no, it's possible. We have to assume that if it's an accurate date, then it must be that you wrote it earlier, right? Because we know you didn't write it on Shabbos or Yom Kippur, and therefore we assume you wrote it at an invalid time rather than a valid time. So Amar Lo Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi Yehuda says, Masa Balifan Unecha B'Tzipori. Didn't the story once come to you in Tzipori V'Echsharta, and you said it was Kasher? Amar Lo, Ani Lo Echsharti. I didn't. And if I did, I did. Right? He's like, you know, right? Meaning, if I did, I did, but it was wrong. Haven boy memer. So then he says, man, the apostle Mishum Muktam, the one who says it's invalid is because it was predated. Right? And man, the Amar Mishum Kasher Mishum Uchar, the one who says it's kasher is because we're allowed to assume that it's post-dated. And the Gemara says, maybe not. Elamandi Amar Paso Mishum Ziyuf. The Gemara says, no, maybe that's not why. Maybe it's that it's not that their argument whether it was predated or postdated. It's that Rabbi Yossi doesn't buy this whole sugya. And he says, if you write something in a shtar that isn't true, that is called a forgery. And therefore, I understand that you were trying to disadvantage yourself. And maybe you have the right to do that, but you don't have the right to sign a shtar that does that because now you are lying. And that is a forgery. So that's the second day in the Gemara that no. It's not that they're arguing about whether it was more likely to be Muktam or Mochar. It's that they're arguing whether the very fact of writing something that isn't accurate, even if it's true that I'm weakening my authority over it, is enough to invalidate the shtar or not.